from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The Target security breach, which may have affected up to one-third of Americans, is making many people very jittery. We all rely on credit and debit cards. We don't want our identities stolen, our savings wiped clean, our credit destroyed. But the Target numbers just keep getting bigger. And that's just one case. This hour on Point, the Target security breach, what's wrong with our system, what's holding up change, and what you can do to protect yourself. 110 million Americans, maybe, vulnerable in the Target case. Joining me first today from Arlington, Virginia, is Brian Krebs. He is one of the country's top reporters and writers on cybersecurity. He broke the Target story and the more recent report of a data breach at Neiman Marcus. His blog is KrebsOnSecurity.com. Brian Krebs, thanks very much for being with us. Welcome.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So you've been writing since December that these credit cards stolen through Target have been on sale around the web. Go out and buy them by the million.
That's right. It seems no matter how many times I look around at different stores in the underground, and this may seem incredible, but it's true. There are dozens of places on the internet, if you know where to go, where you can buy cards stolen from retailers like Target. Although these days, if you keep looking around and you're working with banks that are actually buying up their own cards, you're going to find you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a shop that's selling Target cards.
So you're talking about banks buying their own cards? So they're trying to buy them back off the market and mop it up? Is that it?
It's more of an intelligence technique than it is a fraud prevention technique. I don't know that any of them are still doing that. Early on, some of them were, just because there was a lot of confusion about where the breach was and, how exposed they may have been. So if they're a mid-sized bank and they see, thousands of their own cards suddenly flood the underground, well then, that's a pretty good indication that there's been a very large breach. And, that was some of the telemetry that informed my early reporting.
It seems like there's so much looseness throughout this system. So you're telling us, you told us in December that first batch of 40 million maybe, those cards were for sale lickety-split online if you knew where to go. Now we're talking about another 70 million, maybe 110 million. Is that for sale now too? Do you know where to go and find it? Are they up there?
I don't know, no, but I've gotten a lot of questions about this. So, I think it's important everybody keep in mind that these numbers are they're not static. They're fluid.
We've noticed, and they just go up.
Yeah, and they go up, and this is sort of everybody wants to know right away. So companies put out statements about what they think is the problem, and then they discover it's a lot bigger than they thought. I think there's been a lot of discussion about this 110 million number. I couldn't find anywhere that said that included 110 million credit cards. They came out with a separate statement last week that said the names, addresses, phone numbers, and there's one other piece, email address on 70 million.
Okay, so not Social Security, not credit card. Is that a vulnerability then, or is that just chaff?
That's a really good question. A lot of people are trying to figure that out because it depends on a couple of things. For one thing, if this information was somehow matched up with credit card information, that would be that would present a much more serious threat. So you can imagine all the debit cards. So Target came out early on and said, they got the debit card pins, but that information is really strongly encrypted, and we don't think that people have to worry about that. Well, all of a sudden the bad guys have phone numbers for these people, you can imagine what happens next, right? They start calling these people pretending to be their bank because they know where they bank, right? Mm-hmm. The first six digits of their card number tell you which bank issued the card. So they call you and they pretend you're your bank, and to verify you, they need your PIN. Right. So I'm just saying, I'm just putting this
fishing
out.
Fishing with a PH on a grand scale here, potentially.
Right. I mean, via email or phone or what have you. Sure.
This information came out at all in part because of your reporting. That's kind of amazing in itself. We have the sense that this has gone on a lot where we've never learned. How did the Target story come to light? What role did you play in that, Brian?
Well, I alluded to it earlier. Some of this was just a it's been – I've been sort of, for better or worse, become kind of the hub for folks in the financial industry that are trying to figure out just what the heck is going on, because every part of the credit card industry is set up so that, you know, one part doesn't really know what's going on in the other part.
Little fiefdoms.
Yeah, and so the banks sort of, you know, they rely on these relationships with people and I guess occasionally journalists, because I kept getting, you know, the middle of December started getting pings from people in the financial industry, sources and so on, and they would say, hey, Krebs, we think there's something really big going on, but we're not really sure. What are you hearing? And I thought, I don't know, but it sounds like I better get to work.
And at this point, Target had not said anything publicly.
Right, and Target hadn't said anything. And so I said, well, gee, you know, let me talk to some of my bigger sources, and I did. I contacted a largish bank, and come to find out that they had been proactive, and they did what I mentioned earlier, which is they went on the some of these more, if we can say, reliable underground sites where they sell stolen credit cards, and they bought back a bunch of their cards, and they looked to see what was the common point of purchase. Right? Did everybody use these at the same place? Well, they found that all of the cards had been used at Target between Thanksgiving and December 15th. And I thought that was very, very interesting. But the guy was very quick to say, look, you know, this is not super surprising, because on any given day, a very large percentage of the American public actually shops at Target anyway. So, you know, this could be a false positive. And so I said, all right, well, what wonder if we got the same thing if we talked to another. So I went to a smaller bank and I told them what happened. Mm-hmm. And they said, wow, really? People do that? And I said, yeah. They said, well, could you help us figure out how to do that? I said, no problem, but you have to agree to tell me what you find. And they said, no problem, just don't use our name. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, yeah, go here, do that, and you'll find your cards. And they looked at them and they said, sure enough, all of them were used between that time period at Target.
And so meanwhile, while all this is going on and you're doing this reporting on the behalf of banks, Target's still saying nothing to the American people, 40 million of whom are exposed.
Yeah, well, you know, and I don't want to come off like I'm defending Target here, but they were a victim of cybercrime, and they're not in the computer security business. You know, they're in the
But
the
didn't they know at that time? You knew, don't you think they knew, or did you inform them too?
According to the CEO, I think he said they already knew at that point, and they had known for several days. You know, I think, and again, I can't speak for them. I'm just sort of trying to get inside their brain a little bit. You know, when you're dealing with these attacks, the first thing you want to do is shut it down. The second thing you want to do is make sure you can take stock of just how bad the damage is. So, did you overlook anything obvious? Are the bad guys somehow still there? And that situation awareness that takes a little bit of time. For them, it was, you know, if you read the stories, it sounds like, oh, they decided to go out with this on their own on the 19th, the day after I broke my story. But I don't know if that's true. My sense is, you know, if they had their druthers, it would have come out sometime after Christmas. So.
I mean, that just seems to me they're putting on a full court press now to show their responsibility and full transparency and so on. But they sat on it for a long time. They might have sat on it forever. And others have sat on it for a long time and maybe forever. What's their responsibility to come forward here? Because in that time when they're saying nothing, people don't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, I don't think in this case, they're such a huge brand and they have so many customers that we've seen. There's just no way they could have kept it under wraps for a whole lot longer.
But they did. My point is, I mean, there's so many things we're going to talk about in this hour about this system that don't seem right. But this seems just top of the list. When you get a huge breach like this, 40 million, now up at 110 million in one way or another, and Target was prepared to just sit on that until they were leveraged to come out with it and make it public? I mean, what's their responsibility to the public here?
Well, that's a very good question. So all public companies have an obligation, thanks to laws in, I don't know, 48, I think, or 49 states in the District of Columbia that say, you know, if you have a data breach that affects consumers' financial information, personal information, you have to tell them about it. But there are carve-outs in these laws. Essentially say, look, if you're working with law enforcement and there's some concern that disclosing might disrupt that activity, then, you know, it's okay to keep it under wraps for a little while. So that they don't have any sort of – I don't think they have any sort of legal exposure for not coming out with this sooner. But certainly people – And you're sort of voicing it as well. I mean, people have been very frustrated and felt sort of powerless in this whole episode.
So. We're going to look at the whole system here, but it seems like American consumers are very vulnerable here. Things tend to get wrapped up, but it's an awful lot of headache and uncertainty and vulnerability for people in the meantime. And you're looking at this. I want to talk with you about how this was done, because as it gets mm-hmm. bigger, 110 million, you wonder, how on earth did they do that? You're reporting on sort of hair roots from this going out to Cyprus and India and all over the world.
Right. So that what you're talking about is something I want to get into a little bit more in a few minutes. I want to try not to conflate these two things. That thing about Cyprus and India was actually something that a lot of readers had thought was related to Target, but it wasn't. But it's a good example of why, you know, the whole monitor your statements thing is so important. I mean, I've gotten so many questions from news folks saying, you know, do you have any tips other than keep an eye on your statement for mm-hmm. consumers? Mm-hmm. But, you know, even if you didn't shop at Target or Neiman Marcus or some other company that had a breach over the holidays, it's a real good time for the bad guys to push fraud through people's cards, because they're busy, they're not paying attention, they're putting lots of stuff, a lot more stuff on their statements than they normally would. People aren't looking at this. And that was the point of that story, was that millions of people were seeing $9.84 charges on their cards.
And it was all bogus and all over the world in its origin. Brian Krebs broke the Target story. He's with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We are talking this hour about the giant debit and credit card data breaches at Target and beyond, how they're pulled off, and how, whether the system can deal with them, why Americans are left so vulnerable. Wake-up calls for people here. Portland, Oregon, Carol Wickender, credit card was breached, sold on the black market. Carol found charges totaling $1,300. There was one big red flag, you told Oregon's KGW news station in December.
Come to find out that those charges were from Africa.
Oh, okay. That's not where Carol was. Here's Jessica Hentwick. Interview with Milwaukee, Wisconsin's WISN station on Monday.
I think I'll take cash out before I ever use a credit card again at mainly any store.
She'll just use cash and use Target CEO Greg Steinhoffel. We're devastated.
I was devastated. I mean, how could this happen to Target?
Talking there with NBC News' Kristen Dahlgren on Sunday. Well, we'll look at how it happened, both in particular and system-wide. Brian Krebs, standby in Arlington, Virginia. With us right now from Rockville, Maryland, is Aviva Leighton, Vice President, Analyst at Gartner, big technology research and advisory firm. She's a go-to thinker on cybersecurity and fraud detection, identity proofing, identity theft. Aviva Leighton, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
We hear these numbers like, you know, a nickel out of every dollar goes to cyber theft, cyber insecurity. You say it's even higher than that. How much?
We don't have the exact numbers because they're not disclosed, but it's probably more like 15 to 20 cents at this point. When you add up merchant fraud and issuer fraud.
That's kind of incredible. Is that sustainable? 15 to 20% out of every dollar? That's a huge chunk.
Actually, that's out of $100, sorry. It's not sustainable. I think the banks are finally saying we got to do something about this. They are in disarray. There's so much customer service costs, issuing new cards, covering the fraud costs temporarily until they get it back from the retailers. The way the system's been wired, the banks just take the money back from the retailers. So it's actually hurting the retailers. But the banks are now suffering from big customer service costs. So that's what's starting to get them. I just spoke with a banker last night, and he said, yeah, I think we finally are going to move to chip cards.
Maybe we've jumped the shark here. Aviva, I think you've said that at this point, if you look globally, it's really almost only the United States and one small country in Africa that still use magnetic strips on their cards instead of that computer chip.
That's correct.
How can that be? Why are we the giant laggard here?
In other countries, the banking system is more closed. So there's two main sides to every transaction, the card issuer side, where the consumers get their cards, and then the merchant side. So in other countries, the consumer bank and the merchant banks are generally the same. So there is a closed-loop system, and they see all the fraud. In this country, it's very fragmented. In fact, it is totally fragmented. So the issuing banks are different than the merchant banks, and the issuing banks can tolerate the fraud losses because the merchant banks are actually responsible for most of it, or for a big portion of it, and they just charge it back to the retailers. So no one's responsible for the end-to-end fraud costs, and they can tolerate the portion that they have. In other countries, that's not the case.
If retailers are ending up picking up the tab, that presumably means they are tacking the cost of this insecurity onto the prices in their stores, so ultimately it's consumers paying for this sloppy, you know, jalopy of security we've got.
That's exactly right. Someone's got to pay, and in the end, the retailers are passing it on in the form of higher prices. Spread out across millions of retailers and hundreds of millions of consumers, the price increases have been manageable, but it is getting out of hand.
It's kind of infuriating tolerating that degree of insecurity in the system. What's safer or less safe, physical stores or online shopping, or does it make a difference, Aviva?
You know, everything's online now, so there really is no good distinction between online and physical stores. The stores are connected to the Internet. Gas stations are connected to the Internet. Vending machines are often connected to the Internet. Parking meters. Everything's online now, so in a sense, it's a false distinction.
So it really doesn't matter if you're in a store or shopping online, you've got the equal vulnerability.
Yeah, you do have equal vulnerability. The store card data is actually worth more on the black market. So you're actually, I think, I get more nervous at a gas pump than I do at Amazon.
And you've said the bigger vulnerability here is for debit cards maybe than credit cards. Am I right, and why?
Well, consumers are protected through a few methods. In credit cards, they're protected through what's called Regulation Z, and they're also protected by Visa and MasterCard zero liability. The same's true with signature debit cards. So if you don't put your PIN in, you're protected by Visa and MasterCard zero liability, not Regulation Z. Regulation Z is only for credit cards.
So if you use your debit card in its kind of credit function, but it still comes out of your account, you sign for it, you're protected. What if you just punch in your PIN there at the retail checkout counter?
So in that case, you're only protected by Regulation E that protects bank accounts. And there are so many different requirements on Regulation E, it becomes much harder for you to get your money back. So it really depends on the bank policy. But the reason it's harder for you to get your money back is it's not as easy for the bank to shift the liability to someone else, like the retailer.
You mean if someone comes into your savings or checking account with your PIN and just takes cash, they have nobody to hoist it off on?
Exactly. You know, the cash is gone.
Wow. So watch out. It may be better to use that debit card in its credit function. Of course, that ends up costing the retailer something more too, doesn't it, Aviva?
Right. Yeah. I don't like giving that advice, but it is best for consumers not to ever use your PIN, and it's worse for retailers because they pay higher fees.
And if it's worse for retailers, ends up coming back to the consumer. Once again, it looks like we've got a credit banking system riding on consumers ultimately to bail out poor security. I want to look at how this happened at a company as big and sophisticated as Target. Here was the Target chairman and CEO again, Greg Steinhoffel, telling CNBC's Becky Quick that Target, this was Sunday, Target's still investigating the data breach.
There was malware installed on our point-of-sale registers. That much we've established. We removed that malware so that we could provide a safe and secure shopping environment. This investigation is ongoing, and it's going to take some time before we really understand the full extent of what's happened.
Brian Krebs, help us understand. First of all, malware installed on point-of-sale registers. You know, you picture cat burglars creeping around in the night, gluing stuff to the bottom of these registers. How would that even happen? Walk us through what's known about how this was done.
Right. Well, so a lot of companies and retailers are no different. You know, once you get inside, it's not often super difficult to get around to all the different systems. But essentially, we don't know exactly what happened, but the bad guys pushed some kind of point of sale malware onto those systems where you swipe your card at the register, and
which they would do online, digitally from some distant point, presumably. I'm kidding about them cat burglaring in the middle of the night, or am I?
Well, it certainly could have been with the help of an insider. There's no question it would have made it probably a little simpler. But once the guys these days, as Aviva said, you know, the physical and the internet systems are increasingly interconnected, and so you know, once you get your foot in the door, it's sometimes not so difficult to get into places you probably shouldn't be into.
But again, this may be a dumb question, but by foot in the door, do you mean just into Target's online system, or do you mean literally foot in the door of a store and installing something at the point of sale register?
Could be either or both, yes.
Wow.
We just don't know at this point.
Okay.
But here's the thing about Target says, you know, how could this happen? You know, this was point of sale malicious software. That's great information to have. I think at this point they probably have just a little more information about what hit them, the type of malicious software that hit them. And the reason I bring this up is this is incredibly important for other retailers out there to be able to use this information to see if they are similarly vulnerable or potentially already hacked. And for them to hold on to this information for going on a month now, I think is pretty shameful. And I would encourage, you know, any retailer that has had a breach like this and has a good sense of what hit them to release the details about that as soon as possible.
Yeah, come on, 110 million people maybe. That's a third of the country. Aviva, do you, in your position, your experience, do you kind of assume that you know what happened here? Is it a pattern that makes it obvious more or less? It's just who did it or not?
Well, there are historical precedents on how these type of breaches happen. Typically, the attack vector is through an email to an employee to get the malware on their machine, and then the malware then finds its way into the system. They get the privileges they need. And, you know, this is the way it works across attacks, not just against retailers, but against companies with intellectual property, where foreign countries are infiltrating. We saw this in the RSA Secure ID breach years ago, or it may have been 18 months ago, I'm not sure. But it's a common attack vector. So it's generally through social engineering. You get something on someone's desktop, and that software is really smart and then gets where it needs to be. And we also see, like Brian mentioned, it could have been help with an insider. An insider can be a contractor, but typically, you know, we've seen some very damaging thefts done by insiders. So maybe Ed Snowden comes to mind. All he did is borrow 27 passwords. You know, a lot of low-tech techniques are used to create a lot of havoc. So it could have just been some contractor just put a piece of software inside the system, and it wasn't really that hard for him to do because he had access.
Of course, in Snowden's mind, he was doing a noble thing. Others say just the opposite. In this case, this is nothing but theft. This is nothing but people grabbing and running with the money, and it's hit a lot of people. One of them is with us right now from Los Angeles. David Lazarus is here, a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. His column this week is titled, "If Firms Like Target Won't Protect Privacy, Make Them Pay." David Lazarus, you paid, I guess. Somebody went a little wild on your cards at Polo and Coach and Tommy Hilfiger and Burberry's. What happened, David?
Well, they went to all these luxury brands, ran up nearly $2,000 in charges. This was on Saturday, just hours after I had that column in the paper talking about how companies don't do enough to protect us. And then suddenly I've got my tuchus on the line with all of these charges being racked up really quickly, too. I mean, clearly somebody was moving from outlet store to outlet store, knowing full well that my card company, in this case Amex, would spot it, would contact me,
yep,
and I'd shut the card down as fast as I could.
What's your take on why we're stuck with this bottom of the heap lousy security system, David, in this country?
Well, we've been hearing about attack vectors and all of the ways that hackers penetrate into these systems. And, you know, these guys, they're not geniuses, but they're going to do everything they can to get in. So it is incumbent on the businesses to circle their digital wagons and make sure that customer data is as protected as it can be. And the problem here is they just don't do it. It's not like this is top secret stuff. They know how to do it. They have the tools to do it, but there's two reasons they don't. First of all, it's really expensive. Most security experts will tell you that for a company the size of Target, it'll cost you millions of dollars to encrypt data, put up virtual private networks.
Okay, but this is going to cost them maybe $100 million to pay off all these stolen losses.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Tom. These guys
more than that, Brian.
And they figure out that whatever losses they're going to have to eat or anything else is going to be less over the long haul than some of these other costs. It's not like these guys are surprised by what happens. They actually run risk assessments, and they decide, they deliberately decide, we're not going to do this much because it's going to hurt our business operations, and we'll just roll the dice and hope that hackers don't get in.
I mean, maybe, but Aviva, it's hard to believe that Target's just nonplussed about 110 million people's data revealed. That's got big cost, too.
Yeah, I would take a different view. There is something called the PCI standard, the Payment Industry Security Standard, that is supported by all the major credit card brands and banks. And Target was compliant. They did spend millions of dollars on security. There's always more that the company can do, but I don't think this is just Target or retailer issues. It's also the banks and the processors. They need to upgrade the payment system that we're using. All sides of the coin have to participate. The technology that's being used today is from 1960. How much technology do you have in your house from 1960?
Not very much. We need a system overhaul, and it feels like we're being played for suckers as Americans here. Ron in Appling, Georgia is calling. Ron, you're on the air. What do you see, Ron?
Tom, there's no doubt in my mind that it seems that there's a showdown going on between the retail and the banking industry on who's going to blink first and shouldering the cost of this new technology. As you said, and the other previous calls said, it's going to be expensive. It's going to be expensive. If anything, it's going to be more beneficial to our government and our free enterprise system to have this done.
Sure.
So why doesn't the government step in and help with this cost? Also, in England, they already have embedded computer chips in their cards.
All over the place. It's us and one other country, Aviva says, in Africa, where we don't run. Our time is short before the break, but you've got a savvy eye on this. I mean, Brian, is this a game of chicken? Who will blink and pay to upgrade?
I think Aviva's probably best to answer this question, but there are some deadlines in October of next year where merchants, if they're not compliant with this new chip and PIN standard, are going to have to eat the fraud costs. If the in the event that the customer comes in with a card with a chip in it and it turns out there's fraud on that card, I don't think that there are the same disincentives for banks that don't have chip and PIN cards issued by that point, are there? Aviva?
No, actually, again, it falls on the retailer. The retailer is the one that's in the front line. But I think the banks are finally getting to the point where they can't take it anymore.
Hey, David, I know we've just got you for another few seconds. What's your take on why this country is letting this go on for so long, David Lazarus?
Well, I think we let it go on because sheer laziness, quite simply. I mean, there's a cost effect to it. There's also an inconvenience factor. The more security you pile onto your computer system, the harder it is for workers, for business partners to get at this data. And a lot of companies feel that in this gotta-go economy that we have, you don't want to put any barriers to accessing the data, but that just leaves customers vulnerable. Ultimately, it is incumbent on the stewards of these databases, whoever they may be, to do everything they possibly can to protect the data that's in there. From the consumer's point of view, we can talk about all the standards and all the policies and the banks and all the various players, and the other guests are right. There are a lot of people involved with this, but ultimately, all the data is in a repository, and whoever has the keys to that repository is responsible.
David Lazarus at the Los Angeles Times, thank you for joining us today, David. We're looking at this big Target security breach and more. Listeners, you can join us. What's your question on how all this works? The thieves, the banks, the retailers. Why is America at the back of the pack on credit card security? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the giant debit and credit card data breaches at Target and beyond, how they're pulled off and how, whether the system can deal with them, why Americans have been left so vulnerable here. You can join us. What's your question on how all this works? Do you feel left on your own, sort of naked here? Can we get a better system in this country? Here's a Target shopper. This is Christine in Beaverton, Michigan. She had $500 worth of fraudulent charges on her credit card, amount she didn't expect. Here she's talking with Portland, Oregon station KGW in mid-December.
I actually was just kind of checking our balance and then saw that there was some, it was more than I thought it would be.
Yeah, but should we have to put up with that? Here's Tim Nolan. He was on a backpacking trip in Guatemala, Honduras, left high and dry. The Target breach left him unable to take cash out at a foreign ATM.
I try to get money out of ATM and it declined me. I'm out of the country. Like, I'm in Honduras. I'm on an island.
This is everyday life not working for Americans because of a security breach. And here's their chairman and CEO again, Greg Steinhoffel, telling CNBC's Becky Quick that we'll be responsible.
Clearly, we're accountable and we're responsible. But we're going to come out at the end of this a better company, and we're going to make significant changes. I mean, that's what you're doing when you go through a period like this. You have to learn from it, and you have to apply those learnings, and we're committed to do that.
So will we nationally? Tressa in Fort Campbell, Kentucky is calling. Tressa, you're on the air. What's your story?
Hi, Tom. Yes, I've been actually wondering about this for a while now. My husband and I were in Europe over the summer, and when we showed them our cards, we were laughed at quite a bit because we don't have the microchip system that that your guests were discussing.
Because you have the old magnetic strip along the back, like almost all of us have on our American credit cards.
Exactly. Yes, there were even some young cashiers who didn't even know how to handle our cards. I was wondering, I know that your guests have discussed it a bit so far, but what exactly is the difference in security between the magnetic strip and the microchip?
Difference in security, magnetic and microchip. Who wants that? Brian, Aviva?
I'm happy to take it.
Sure.
So basically, with a magnetic stripe, the data is encoded on the stripe. So it's written to the stripe. It's not encrypted. And it just travels through the system, typically unencrypted, although the pins are encrypted. With the chip, the security is inside the card. There's a computer processor on the card.
Yep.
And there's a signature there, a digital certificate. If you use a pin with it, you unlock that certificate, and then the person accepting the transaction says, yes, this is Brian Krebs, for example, if it's his card.
Yep.
And we know he's there. And you can also use it without the PIN. But the difference is there's a random code generated each time that it's sent up to the processor. So it's never a repeat. The data's encrypted. And the PINs are never transmitted.
So a dumb system, really, versus a smart system. Aviva, are in Europe and basically everywhere else other than the United States, do they suffer significantly less data theft because of that technology?
Okay, so here's the rub.
Oh, no.
The countries that put chip in, which is most countries around the world,
yep,
put it in, then the card present fraud has definitely declined. But so in-store fraud, where there's a card presented, that yep, has definitely done the job. But what's happened, since there's still a magnetic stripe on the back, there's still cross-border fraud and there's still e-commerce fraud. So with the U.S. goes on board with chip, they can finally get rid of that magnetic stripe, and that data won't be transmitted anymore. And then we can really shut down card-present fraud around the world and ATM fraud. Then we still have to worry about e-commerce.
But the reason we can't shut it down around the world is because Americans still have that dumb magnetic strip, and so the whole world has to have that vulnerability?
Exactly, and that's why your listeners run into what they run into. The European countries are getting tired of Americans coming with their magnetic stripe, and they're tired of their consumers coming to the U.S. and using the mag stripe and the card. So you're starting to get shut off from being able to do commerce in those countries.
Tressa, in Fort Campbell, it's a good thing they were laughing at you and not teed off. I mean, what a ridiculous situation. Brian, I hear you there.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I mean, when it comes to ATM skimmers over in Europe, when it comes to the attacks against retailers over there, they're not immune to these attacks. But as Aviva said, what they do is they tend to take all the information they've collected, and again, this data that you steal from that magnetic stripe on the back of the card is just ones and zeros. You put it in a text file, you attach it to an email, and you send it to your goons over here in the U.S., and they go and they use a little piece of plastic encoder, and they put it onto plastic, and they go take money out of ATMs. I mean, it's not rocket surgery, and that lack of security technology is driving that.
It just seems like this system makes idiots of a whole country, our country. Mark in Glastonbury, Connecticut. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, Tom. One of the things that I wanted to raise is that a couple David Lazarus almost got to it,
mm-hmm.
okay? But one of the things that I wanted to raise is they talk about who's paying for this. The retailers are paying for this, and the banks. We're paying for it. Look mm-hmm. at the, are you paying 17 or 18 or 19 or 25% on your credit card?
Many are.
That's why.
Well,
nobody's talking about that.
Well, hang on, Mark. Aviva, is that where it goes back, or is it in the price of goods because retailers mm-hmm. ultimately have to bite the bullet here?
Well, the card issuers charge interest on the cards, presumably to pay for the cost of security and risk. And so the merchants end up covering those costs. So in the end, any way you look at it, the merchants pay for fraud costs.
So the high interest rate is just security issues are just an excuse to jack it up?
Well, it's part of the equation. But on the merchant side, they pay high fees to cover the cost of security, plus they pay for the fraud costs when there is a security breach. On the consumer side, the interest rates in part are based on how much risk there is with that consumer.
Mark, I'm glad you raised it. David in Hartford, Connecticut. David, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah.
Good show. Always enjoy it.
Great.
My comment is, it seems to me that instead of collecting all the phone calls from little Johnny to his grandmother, the National Security Agency, with all its technology and capability, could really provide a national security service by hardening systems and working with companies to track down perpetrators of this kind of fraud. Because, in this interconnected global world, our economic system is really a matter of national security. I mean, physical security, yes, that's one thing. But if you're gradually draining all our companies, and in turn that results in job loss and so forth.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at 110 million people, you're up into big portions of the whole population, of the whole economy. Brian, how about it? Let's say, if you wanted to bring the hammer down here, I get the magnetic strip is undefendable, basically, because it's just naked. But if you wanted to go after the people who steal the sites that put up these credit cards and mm-hmm. sell them and all the rest, if we really brought some tech power to bear on this, could a sheriff come in and clean up this town?
Well, look, unless you're willing to drop from the sky and start double-tapping people in, Russia and Eastern Europe, if you're ready for the consequences of that, I think seems a little far-fetched.
What do you mean double-tapping? You're talking about you've got to have Navy SEALs coming down? Can't we just do this
Well, I mean,
the
what FARC? Else? Why else involve the NSA? I mean, look, first of all, be careful what you wish for in terms of having the NSA more involved in your day-to-day
activities.
I think
it's a little bit hypothetical. Maybe not the NSA, but law enforcement, let's say.
Okay. But number two, we don't need the NSA to tell us who's responsible for this. I mean, it took me about, a day to figure out one of the main guys responsible for selling the cards.
Who is
Target.
He?
There's a guy in Ukraine, Odessa, Ukraine, and he's part of a larger network. It's not just one guy. I mean, of course, when you're talking about this type of fraud, you're talking about most likely multiple crime gangs working
together.
Okay,
but let's start where we can. Is anyone knocking on his door, or is he still selling? As you figured it out in an hour, he's still selling today?
Certainly, yeah, absolutely. They're still selling them. I mean, look,
where's Interpol? Where's global justice here? Where's Superman?
This is the really unfortunate part about cybercrime, and much of it is being perpetrated from Russia and former Soviet states. And, you know, as long as those guys stay in those countries, they're fine. It's if they decide to vacation in France or, you know, the Seychelles or something like that, that's a different story, and absolutely Interpol. But I mean, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, they're going to just parachute into these countries and arrest these guys.
Don't we have legal arrangements with the Ukraine where we could go and just legitimately make an arrest with you through the Ukrainian authorities?
We certainly do, and you know, I'm sure that law enforcement folks could talk a little more about that. I know they work very hard to build those relationships. But you know, at the end of the day, if these guys are targeting purely Western victims, then they're going to have a hard time making the case that it's worth going after these guys over there.
Wow, and we just get played like suckers. Scott in North Andover, Massachusetts. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Great show as usual.
Thank you. What do you see?
Hey, Tom, just a thought. I'm on my way into Starbucks now, and I'm going to use my smartphone, and they're going to scan an app on my screen that's going to, you know, create a transaction and make a payment.
Yeah. So
I have heard nothing, no mention about that technology.
Let me take that to Aviva. Aviva, I think you're looking at this and saying maybe Visa's really wants to leapfrog the whole computer chip on the card business and go straight to, what, mobile payment?
Yeah, that's true, but I'd like to address the listener's comment that the Starbucks payment system isn't directly related to the Visa initiative, that all these breaches are really opening up space for competition, like the Starbucks payment system, PayPal. Of course, they ride the rails into some degree of the credit card systems. Systems like Bitcoin, by the way, that has security that is light years ahead of what Visa and MasterCard are offering, even with chip. So, you know, the good news is maybe we'll finally see some innovation take hold in the payments marketplace. It's been really hard with the credit card industry so embedded. But what you were saying about the Visa mobile payment, the deadlines that Visa is imposing on merchants next year is that they have terminals that accept both mobile payments and the card touching the terminal payment. And the way they've built the incentives is to incent merchants to accept Visa and MasterCard, what's called EMV mobile payments. So they're very worried about competition in the mobile payment space. So the incentives are all about get the merchants to put the terminals in so Visa and MasterCard can continue to dominate payments with mobile payments.
And this means so I can pay with my smartphone. Is that safer?
It is safer than these magnetic stripes because we have chips on our smartphones.
But if they get it, if someone gets into my smartphone, they've got, you know,
that's true.
My whole life.
Hopefully you've got an identifier like a biometric or a PIN that only you know, so you're not completely reliant on the smartphone.
Brian, it sounds to me, even if that's the way they push, it's going to be years before the majority of Americans are paying regularly with smartphones at checkout counters the way we do with credit cards now. Is that salvation out there in that direction, Brian, or not?
Yeah, I think anything that moves us from the current system is a great step in the right direction. And unfortunately, the stuff that Viva's just described, I mean, these are positive moves. And I hope, as she expressed, I think that we get some more competition. And if mobile payments is the way to do that, that's great. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, the bad guys usually are at the forefront of innovation and the rest of the industry just sort of responds. So, you know, I don't really see that changing going forward, and I wish it were the other way around, but it's not.
And the U.S. responding last. That's what's galling here. Cynthia in Chicago. Thanks for calling, Cynthia. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, how much of this problem do you think is related to the American way of just pursuing short-term profits, you know, get your returns to shareholders, get the pop on the stock market, rather than reinvesting and move into this chip and doing what's better for the common good?
Good question. Aviva, I'll bring it to you. I mean, with one-third, 110 million, that's almost a third of us. That means everybody feels insecure. Everybody's checking their statements. It may go back to the retailer, but it puts everybody on the hot seat. It undermines your quality of life and maybe your bank account. Why is this going on?
I have a big smile on my face when your listener just asked that question. That's exactly right on the mark. It's short-term thinking. There's no incentives in the system to think ahead. We're seeing these breaches at Target, Neiman Marcus, multiple retailers that haven't been announced yet. It's becoming untenable. And if we had looked back at this in 2006, we would have seen this happening in 2013-14. No one's thinking about the future trajectory because the incentive is all about meeting shareholder expectations.
Are the incentives that different in Europe, or do they, I mean, are we just placid consumers here, you know, bovine standing around chewing our cud and not complaining? Or what's the difference?
I think it's different in other countries for other reasons, not the long-term vision. It's different because, as we talked about before,
yeah,
they're
uniform.
Seeing the whole picture.
Yeah, uniform system. I don't know. Is it a banking lobby here that's leaning against getting something done? Or is there government pressure anywhere for this to get tidied up, Aviva, sewn up?
The government has been completely out of the picture in terms of passing any cybersecurity legislation that's meaningful in the last few years. The last time Congress got involved was in the 2006 card systems breach, and that led to this PCI standard.
$110 million looks like enough to me. How could citizens help sort of throw down a gauntlet and say, cut it out, we don't want to live this insecure way when it comes to simple daily commerce?
Really, they got us by the tail. I mean, there's not much anyone can do unless you want to start using cash and checks, and no one's going to want to do that.
Give us a better answer. You may be right, but there's got to be something. We don't want to accept that.
Honestly, there isn't, because cards are so embedded. We're hooked on them, and also we get all these great frequent flyer miles that the retailers also pay for, by the way. So we're hooked. We're protected. They've got us. We're protected. We know we're going to get our money back if we see it on our statement. We know we're going to get frequent flyer miles, and we're not going to give up our cards.
Brian, we're stuck in this dumb system. Can that be true?
Well, sure. I mean, look, what are you going to do, revert to cash? I mean, the caller who called in earlier, she says, no, I'm not going to use my card anymore. Well, you know, we've talked about this. The cost of fraud is already built into the system. You're paying for it at the register. Should you also pay for it because you get mugged and that money gets stolen? I mean, that just doesn't make any sense.
Time for some public action here. I'm not sure I know what it is, but you sure raise our antenna to know that it's required to get this thing off the dime. $110 million, that's got to be enough. Aviva Leighton with Gartner, we really appreciate your being with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Brian Krebs, I guess we're counting on you to keep doing that great reporting. Let us know what's going on. Brian Krebs with KrebsOnSecurity.com. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Tom.
This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.